Welcome to the South Cars Outreach Program. Join our training session in progress.
Good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 in Good Amateur Practice. This SCAR server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System provided by Kilo Bravo 8 Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they have checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for our digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net controls for this evening are actually KY6B, Gordon, and Jim. WB4LBM, my name is Kathy, my call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I'm merely opening the program this evening. I live in the city of Vero Beach, Florida, 10 minutes from the Atlantic coast, where it's currently 86 degrees, high today of about 88, a beautiful day. And today is the last day of my vacation, summer vacation. I return to school tomorrow, so I'm enjoying it thoroughly. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask, if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled, if so, I ask you to come aboard. Hearing no emergency traffic, and you know that's always a great thing. I know there's someone out there celebrating a birthday as well as an anniversary, but I knew he was going to be away, so he probably won't respond. But do we have any birthday stations celebrating their birthday either this week or maybe this past week that'd like to come aboard and just say hi to us this evening? If so, come aboard. Hearing no birthday stations, but I know he's listening out there. He's out to feed the animals, I think. Happy birthday, George, and happy anniversary as well. So this session tonight is the TIN Open Forum, and this is called Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. You know, the session tonight is about a fox handling, and we have some great experts out there. I haven't been involved with it, but I'm sure looking forward to what they have to say. I'm going to give you one announcement before I actually call on our master of ceremonies this evening, but let me drop it here for just a moment. And once again, I want to thank everyone for joining our TIN this evening. We have this once a month, and we always have some great programs. But I do want to advise everyone that our extra course is starting to wind down. We have two more sessions left. We completed the 10th class on Tuesday evening, and Gordon and myself will be running as instructors on both Sunday and Tuesday evening, and that will complete our extra course for 2013. But I do want to advise everyone that thanks to Paul and 4FTD, all the podcasts and information are on our website. So if you care to just do it on your own time, all that information is there. So with that, Mr. Gordon, I hope that you're all ready to begin the program this evening. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for allowing me to introduce you. KY6V, the gavel is all yours.
Well, thank you, Miss Sunshine. Good evening, guys and gals. Gordon here, KY6V. Squawking to you from the shores of the Atlantic, or close to anyway, here in Central Florida. I looked at my temperature, I guess it was about an hour ago, and by golly, we were still at 93 degrees. But we are planned by the meteorologist to plummet down to about 74 here in the middle of the night. A little bit of rain still expected before the day is out. Humidity is about 56%. I'm a little curious. I looked at the radar here maybe 30 minutes ago, and all the rain cells and weather-wise that's going on is moving from east to west down here right now. And when I see something like that, because it's normally west to east, I think there's something building up in the Atlantic, but I can't see anything on the radar at all out there, nor down in the Caribbean that may be spurring this up. So, you know, I sort of sit back and wonder if something's there that we just don't know about yet. Okay, I'm going to reset everybody's timers. We're going to be talking about transmitter hunting tonight. And I'm very pleased to be running the show here with a good friend of ours up there in Georgia. That's Jim, WB4LBM. Had a lot of experience in this area also, and I've been doing it on and off for a lot of years. And I think it's just a great adjunct to the amateur hobby. So allow me to reset your timers, and we'll get started. Okay, transmitter hunting, you know, also known as tea hunting, fox hunting, bunny hunting, and bunny chasing, is an activity wherein participants use radio direction finding techniques to locate one or more radio transmitters hidden within a designated search area. And this activity is most popular among amateur radio enthusiasts, and one organized sport variation is known as amateur radio direction finding. You'll learn more about that as we talk further into the subject here tonight. Transmitter hunting is pursued in several different popular formats. Many transmitter hunts are organized by local radio clubs, may be conducted in conjunction with other events such as, you know, radio enthusiast conventions or club meetings. Before each hunt, participants are informed of the frequency or frequencies on which the transmitter will be operating, and a set of boundaries that define a search area in which the transmitters will be operating will all be located for the participants. Transmitter hunters use radio direction finding techniques to determine the likely direction and distance to the hidden transmitter from several different locations, and then triangulate, now there's a good word that we'll be talking about, triangulate the probable location of the transmitter. Some hunts may include limits on the amount of time allowed to find the transmitter, although many transmitter hunts are conducted just for the fun of the activity. Some more competitive hunts will recognize winners in publications and offer awards and such as medals and trophies, etc. Let me buy another nickel here, please. Mobile transmitter hunts are organized events where participants travel exclusively or primarily in a motor vehicle. Most mobile transmitter hunts use VHF transmitters and receivers. Some participants use radio direction finding equipment and antennas mounted on a vehicle, whereas others use antennas that are temporarily deployed, you know, through an open window in the car or an opening in the vehicle roof that can be easily rotated by hand while the vehicle is in motion. Other participants employ handheld antennas and radios that can only be used when the vehicle is stationary. Some mobile transmitter hunts require participants to leave their vehicle. And I found this in most cases. You know, you got to get out of your vehicle when you get to that final point and proceed on foot to reach the actual location of the radio transmitter. The winner of a mobile transmitter hunt can be either the first vehicle to arrive at the hidden transmitter or that vehicle that travels the shortest overall distance to locate the hidden transmitter. Mobile transmitter hunts are more popular, incidentally, in North America than other parts of the world, and I guess this is probably because of the pavement and terrain and, you know, what is necessary. Let me buy another nickel, please, and this is KY6V for Southgard. An interesting point here, some transmitter hunts feature a mail-in competition, in which teams in fixed locations work together to locate hidden transmitters, then secretly give the coordinates to the organizers without actually traveling to the transmitter location. The team that provides the closest coordinates, wins. Thus, a team which believes that the transmitter is at the Northwest parking lot at 2nd and Elm, if it's actually there, will beat a team which says that the location is 2nd and Elm. Now, this type of hunt enables participation by contestants who are unable to travel, such as shut-ins, school groups, etc., and requires a great level of skill and coordination. Let's talk about directional antennas for a moment, if I may. They are popular choices for transmitter hunting. A directional antenna is more sensitive to receive signals in some direction than others. When a directional antenna is rotated, a received signal will either increase or decrease in signal strength, information from which a skilled hunter can determine the likely direction of the transmitter. The most popular designs for mobile transmitter hunts are quad antennas with 3 to 5 elements. Special design considerations include adequate strength to withstand the wind at highway vehicle speeds and ease of repair after a collision with overhead tree branches, and that happens. In mobile transmitter hunts, directional antennas are often turned by hand while the vehicle is in motion. I think it's time for another five-nickel break here. KY6V for South Cars. We'll have a lot of chat on all of this, guys and gals. I'm just trying to give you some preparatory information. Some radio direction finding equipment popular with mobile transmitter hunters operates on the time difference of arrival principle. Two identical antennas are mounted at precise distance apart from one another. Specialty electronics compare the phase of the signal received on each antenna and determine whether the signal is coming in from a direction closer to one antenna or the other. This information is commonly displayed with LEDs on a display, and these devices are popular for mobile transmitter hunts where participants have to exit the vehicle and proceed to the transmitter location on foot. Now then again, some mobile transmitter hunters use equipment based on exploiting the principle of Doppler shift. At least four antennas are mounted in a precise geometric pattern, often on the roof of the vehicle. Specialty electronic computers compute the amount of Doppler shift present at the received signals and determines a probable direction from which the signal orients. The direction is commonly displayed using LEDs oriented in a circle or a straight line. And advanced units can use a compass or GPS receiver to compute a direct relative direction to relative to the instant motion of the vehicle, and that's sort of neat. Last but not least in this pre-up here is attenuators, and I want to talk about that for a moment, are used by transmitter hunters to reduce the received signal strength of a transmitter. Attenuators are most often used when approaching the near vicinity of a transmitter in order to keep the received signal strength within a usable range. And this is very, very important. I think that's something that you need to have in your ditty bag. You get too close to that transmitter, it's going to overload the front end of your receiver, and you're not going to be able to do what you need to do. You need to attenuate that incoming signal by some means so that you're not overloading the radio and you can still get a proper S-meter look-see, and it just solves a lot of problems. So, at this point, Let's open this session for check-ins. We would like to hear from all of you that have participated in this aspect of the hobby, and if so, tell us about what type of equipment you used and how the hunt was conducted. And before I send this to the floor, I'm going to send it over to Jim up there in Georgia for any comments, and I'll let you open it up at this juncture if we have anybody that would like to make a comment. Jim, WV4LVM from KY6V in South Carson. And I'm not hearing you, Jim, but I do see you still connected. WB4LBM, are you there, sir? KY6V.
Yes, sir. I'm right here. Good morning. Good evening, brother. Oh, all right. All righty. Yeah, we've had several experiences regarding box hunting. And some of them quite unique. And some of the box hunts that we were on had one winner, but several people found the fox. The first one wins the prize, but the last one in line gets the honorable recognition anyhow. So we have been to a lot of them. I always found the fox, but I never did find the fox first. Generally, the closest I ever got was second. And I thought that's pretty good considering. especially considering I didn't have a thing in the world in their car for direction finding, other than a walkie-talkie and the mobile radio we had in the car. But we still found the fox, but not quite fast enough. But anyhow, it was a very good experience, and I was glad to have the opportunity. Now then, he said to ask for some stations, so we'll do just that. WB4LBM, and so we can take some check-ins, please. Give you a suffix only, WB4LBM.
Victor X-Ray Papa.
All righty. We got one anyhow, Victor X-Ray Papa, WB4LBM. Good evening.
WB4LBM in the net and 1ZXP, good evening. My experience all goes back when I was living in Connecticut. Local, couple of different clubs ran fox hunts. Of course, they did them on VHF repeaters. And it was quite a challenge because they used the voice, trying to give people a little bit of a hint. And as far as location, of course, they had to be within range of the repeater, even down to 1 watt. So it was quite a challenge. They start out at, I'll say, maybe 10 watts. And the whole purpose was not so much to hear on the repeater, but to hear the input. And I was in several vehicles, and what we did was we just listened for the signal as far as the input, trying to triangulate where they were by hearing how strong it was, and also by the hints that they would give as far as their location. Of course, we had to keep in mind that they could not be anywhere near a city or any kind of high-rise or tall buildings, because that would also cause the signal to be kind of tricky. And it was one time, we had somebody, he wasn't really close to a building, but he was close enough that his signal actually bounced off and kind of misled a few of the people looking for him. And we learned right away, try to keep an open area. It could be on a hill, but try not to have any kind of structures that would interfere with the signal. And it was, the whole idea was when it gets, they would last about an hour. And about maybe the last 5 or 10 minutes, they would go down to a lower power output for the repeater as they could make it, which usually amounted to maybe about 2 watts or even 1 watt. It was one particular box that used 1 watt. And it was all based on every 5 minutes we would do a 1-minute transmission. Talking about anything, but the whole purpose at 1 minute was for the hunters to triangulate the signal. And it was a lot of fun, but eventually they did go over to a automated tone carrier signal that a lot of the guys didn't really like. They'd rather hear the person talking. And it was, I had one particular time where I was stationary. I was, and based on the report, what he was giving the hints, I was actually able to get very close. Let me drop in another second. I had decided not to report to anybody where this fox was. I said, well, I think I know where he is, but I'm not saying because I don't want to give it away. I want you guys to be out there looking for him. And everybody couldn't figure out how I knew, and I said, well, listen to the hints. It was always fun with the hints the fox was giving. And I said, well, you know, he gives off enough idea of where he is, but you have to figure it out. It took about, fox hunt took about 30 minutes for somebody to find him, but it was tricky. You know, the idea that I always found that when you have a fox that does talk on the radio, it does make a lot of fun. Repeaters are great, but it also makes it really good because you're not using the repeater output, you're using the input frequency as far as the search. Always enjoyed them, and always thought they were a great aspect of ham radio. And 1GXP back to net control.
Well, very good. Yes, sir. I've seen many of them too. Most of the ones I saw and participated in were operating on simplex, all of them. They wasn't going through repeaters. Not the mobile, the one that. In other words, a fox. He wasn't in no repeater. Now, we always maintain 2 frequencies. I had repeater frequency for doing our talking and so forth, but I never have been on one where the fox talked. The fox on all of them I was ever on would just come up and I forgot how long the transmissions were. I believe they were a minute. But they was in CW. And they was giving the clues also, some of them. But it would be in CW. So if you can't copy CW, forget it. You didn't have much clue there as far as stalking was concerned. I had an interesting... one of them I was on. the people that were searching, they said been searching for 3 hours. There wasn't any time limit. other than dark, they go pretty dark. But anyway, 3 hours had gone by, nobody had been able to find him yet. And one of the brilliant fellows waited for the transmission to quit in CW. and he just reached over and picked up his microphone and said, yeah, where's your QTH? Oh, man, just busted the rest of us all up. We had just about stopped the car. We were supposed to be laughing. Oh, boy. But I thought that was pretty good. All right. Let's see. Do we have someone else? Because that was the end of my list. WB4LBM and AT&T Net. And let's just see if we got the more check-ins. WB4LBM.
Sierra United November.
Now we'll all behave. K6SUN, WB4LBM. Good evening, Kathy. Over.
Well, good evening to you, Jim and Gordon. Thanks for putting this on this evening. But I'll make both of you really laugh with me. You know, I've only been a ham since 2008, so I don't have the experience everyone else does. But actually, when I first heard it, I thought it was what they do in England, chasing a fox. So, you know, I thought I'd give you a little chuckle with that. But something I did with a friend of mine, oh, a few years back, maybe 4 or 5 years, I was visiting her in Largo, here in Florida. She wanted to take me in the car, her and her husband. And I'm not sure what they used to call it, mobile fox hunt, some type of hunt. They had coordinates where someplace, you know, different areas, they would put trinkets and they'd put different items in bushes and in trees and hidden, and it was all done by GPS. Something very similar, but I'm not sure what they called it. But it was a lot of fun doing that. And I remember one time going into a park, going through that entire park, the coordinates just didn't match. We couldn't find anything. And so I remember them saying, well, if you can't find it, you just move on to the next item. Not at all like fox hunting and ham radio, but thought I'd share that with you because it seems a little quiet right now. But I'm looking forward to some of the stories from both you, Jim, and Gordon on the things you've done throughout the years. And thanks for picking me up. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. Back to you, Jim.
Yes, sir. All right. WB4LBM. Well, that's called a scavenger hunt. Scavenger hunt. You recall that none of the items could be very valuable. They had to be pretty much valueless. I know we had a scavenger hunt one Halloween, and you couldn't have nothing of any value at all. So you'd try to get to the left shoe of some kind or other, or the right shoe, whatever they wanted. They'd wanted an old shoe. Couldn't be no new shoe or nothing. And all the stuff was thrown away after the scavenger hunt. But I enjoyed them too. That was fun. All right. Not only have I been in fox hunts, but I used to belong to the Civil Air Patrol. We had a pretty big unit up in Atlanta, and around Atlanta, and we'd search for downed aircraft. So we loved to go on a scavenger hunt because we could simulate emergency that way. And it was very valuable to us. And so everybody would make notes that was in the Civil Air Patrol would make notes and refer to those notes when they had to search for a downed aircraft. But it sure paid off. I found two of them myself. Well, I say I did. Me and Bill Todd, we were a team, and we found two of them. I done the the radios, and he done the driving. And between the two of us, we'd get the job done. And that was felt real good when you just found a downed aircraft, even though there probably wasn't any survivors. Seldom is in a plane crash, but by the way, you feel real good when you find the plane anyway, and you've really done what you're supposed to do. All right, let me see, here in Nicholsworth here. All right. Also, another part of that scavenger, got me on scavenger hunt, on the fox hunt. We had this very little country in and around the city of Atlanta, as you might imagine. There ain't nothing around there, very big football field maybe, something or other. Otherwise, you got buildings everywhere. You also was not given any restrictions about tall buildings because there's tall buildings everywhere. For 25 miles around Atlanta, there's tall buildings, so that wouldn't do you no good. And so that did present a slight of problem of finding a place to hide. And usually it would be in the suburbs. You'd narrow the hunt down to something pretty small, but out of that, anything in there could mess up a signal. Gutters, downspouts, you know, it's anything. Because like I say, there wasn't very few farms there in the city of Atlanta. So, there just wasn't much of a place you could get. But I did find one place. One year we was the fox, and I found a mountain, what I call a mountain anyway. It was a pretty high hill, and we went up this thing, and it wasn't a house in either direction for over a mile. And I didn't even know there was such a place, but it was out on the west side of Atlanta. And so we went out there, and hid right on the top of that hill in the woods. And that's where we hid. And it took them about 2 hours to find us, but they said, gee whiz, that was sneaky. The one big piece of ground in Atlanta, and you chose it. And why I didn't think of it to start with, I don't know. Should have been the first place I took off to look. But anyway. All right. WB4LBM. Check in. Your suffix only, please, sir.
Elaine, Charlie, Bravo.
And some fills for the questions asked, KY6V, sir.
All right, sir. That's very good. Let's go get them fills, and then we'll go down there and then we can get George. So, go ahead with the fills there, Gordon. Over.
Well, I really should go to George first. He may be a little short of time, but I'll make this real quick. You know, I think one of the important things from a safety standpoint, an operational standpoint, is to have at least two people riding this parade as a team. And as you said, Jim, one driving and one manipulating the antennas and recording the equipment findings and get there safely. It's been my experience, Rick, over many years, I don't think I have ever run in a fox hunt that used a repeater. It has always been a simplex operation. It might have been on 10 meters, might have been on 2 meters, it might have been on 440. But we, to my experience anyway, never went through a repeater. But it's an interesting idea. Triangulation, Jim, I think should be mentioned here for those that may be not familiar with that term. It is basically, guys and gals, that you take three spots around the city or wherever you are that you're on the bunny hunt on that are reasonably removed from each other. Three locations. So you take a beam heading from location one, you take a beam heading from location two, you take a beam heading from location three, that's where your triangulation comes in, and you plot that on a map of the area that you're working for the hunt. And where all three of those lines intersect, the probability is 99% strong, or maybe 98% strong, that you are very, very close to the bogey. Let me buy a nickel here for a second. And Rick, I'll tell you what, the groups that I ran in were down and dirty. I don't care. Hey, the taller the building, the better, and I hope it's right in the way, because the reflections just made the whole thing more confusing and really brought the experts out, you know, for the winners. And we operated normally, from my recollection, Jim, we were on 1 minute and off two. We transfer 1 minute to give the guys a chance for a bearing. We'd let the equipment cool for 2 minutes, and then we would be back on. We use both CWIDs and voice simultaneously, or on and off together, however you want to put it. And to Kathy's comment, I think that the scavenger hunt is similar to what we're talking about on amateur radio bunny hunting, other than the device generally is a GPS unit. They give you a coordinate of latitude and longitude and say, this is where the item is, come and find it. And then they bury the stuff under a tree so you can't see it when you get there, or they hang it up into the tree someplace and camouflage it. Where we're doing everything on RF and radio navigation type thing. Thanks for the break, Jim, and pick up George, and thank you, George, KY6V. Go ahead, sir.
All right. Thank you, Jordan. And, all right, George, good evening to you. Go ahead, sir.
Well, good evening to you, Jim, and Miss Rebecca, and Six Victor, and everybody connected tonight. Just got the animals taken care of. Interesting subject, Jim. You know, as you alluded to earlier in one of your experiences with signal tracing or fox hunting or spotters, you know, it's been around a long time, and quite a few ships has been saved, and airplanes has been recovered, and people been rescued by people tracing signals and trying to locate them. And by keeping it up front, as far as fox hunting, you know, keeps the basics down, and I'm quite sure that over the years, you have learned to listen also to the transmitter. Every transmitter has a certain quality of a key up or a snap of a Morse code key or some type of a quirk in there, so to speak, that will identify it there. And as you listen, you learn to identify that particular signal with that transmitter there. And, you know, it has really taught people, you know, as to a lot about different characteristics of transmitters and all. Add more to it later on, but like I said, you learn to see and observe your surroundings, if that's possible. You know, identify them, and the next thing where you learn to identify the signal with the ear and the different meters that you have to go by. You know, intriguing. More about the subject later. KW4 Aleem, Charlie Bravo, back to net control, and thank you, sir.
Yeah, there you go. yeah, you're right, George. Your transmitters, there is about always a small difference in transmitters. You just learn to, I learned it because I dispatched taxis for 7.5 years, and I could tell you every one of my cars, and they didn't have to say nothing. They could just push the radio, and I knew who was transmitting and whose radio was on. In fact, I got a bunch of cab drivers in hot water one night when they was all using the same radio, bidding on a call all over town, but they was all on the same radio. And the boss fired the whole mess of them. But anyway, that's the way it goes. All right, let's see. WB4LBM, I'm down at the end of the list here. So we'll take additional stations. Suffix only.
Well, Jim, while we've got a lull here, I've got a couple of interesting stories I can tell about this subject, sir. KY6V.
Yes, sir. That's just the thing we want here. George, go ahead. I mean, Gordon.
Well, you had me standing by for George, you rascal. Thanks, Jim. KY6V here for South Cars. We're holding our monthly TIN get-together. This happens once a month on Thursday nights. Our subject tonight is fox hunting, bunny hunting, whatever you want to call it. Wanted to tell you, Jim, and the gang a couple of quick stories, but I'll take them one at a time here. Many years ago, I had a friend that owned and operated a gas station in San Francisco, and this was located at the bottom of one of San Francisco's famous hills. And it turned out I was the bunny for this particular hunt and gained permission to use his gas station as the hiding point. So, since this was an evening hunt, the gas station would normally be closed. See, so we ran my car into the garage onto the grease rack, hoisted the rack, shut the garage door, and turned off the lights. Several things should be known here. I was powering the transmitter with a AC power supply using the station electricity with a variac in the primary of the supply. The operation was being run on 2 meters, but my spotter and I were in communication via 220 handhelds. So when he told me that there was a bogey coming down the hill, I'd reach over and I'd turn down the variac, reducing my signal from about 25 watts to about half a watt. And in most cases, when the cars were reaching the bottom of the hill, they just turn around and disappear over the top of the hill, and I wouldn't see them for about another 2 hours. And it took the first place winner, Jim, an hour and a half to find me. And this was only because he was a pretty smart dude, and he was smart enough to be carrying a portable field strength meter. And he finally just sniffed me out of the garage, Jim. KY6V, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, boy. This W4LBM. Yes, sir. That's it. Well, that's kind of like the time I was out hunting the fox. Me and Bill were. And we found the fox. We were the second ones. That's the one I was the second one to find it. But, they had been playing some tricks up there, too. And I knew it, so when we found it, I got out and went over to the fella. I took my handy talk and touched his radio. And I said, "Do you reckon I found it yet, or should I keep looking?" He said, "You found it. Now get your head down from the key. You're right in front of the key." I said, "Oh, Lord have mercy! It's fun. Fox hunting is definitely fun, and especially if you've got a bunch of clowns out there, and all those were, you know, we didn't have no equipment of directional find and stuff like that. We doing good to have a field search there. And by the way, I don't reckon I've ever seen anything except a portable, a small one, because there ain't nothing to a field strength feeder, so they ought to all be small. I ain't never seen a big one. But anyway, there you go. This is WE4LBM, digital stations for the TIN net. Over.
Victor X-Ray Papa.
Sierra United November.
Go ahead, Mitch.
This is N1DXV. Yeah, Kathy also chimed in there. I just want to clarify the reason we use the repeater. We had a couple of occasions where we did find there was an emergency at one time, one of the fellow hams having a problem. And he was having a medical issue, and you know, he could not really speak where he was, but we were able to locate him within a short time based on his input signal. And what it did was, by using the repeater, it was nice because even the non-participants could listen to see, you know, what was going on. We did have one guy that had a Doppler antenna set up, but he was advised, since most of the hams were doing the finding, did not have that kind of equipment. They were basically using whatever 2-meter mobile antenna they had, and also with a handheld, using the handheld with the just a standard antenna, or maybe an extended one, but it was the idea that using the repeater, of course, you didn't really listen to the output frequency, you were always listening to the input, and all of our foxes had to be in a public area, could not be in any kind of private property. It was really, you know, basically had to be out in the open, public park or public field, not in any buildings. Of course, having the signals bouncing off buildings, I myself have learned high-rise buildings do make a lot of fun with signals, but kind of mislead the direction that people are coming in from. And it was just the idea that it was a really good training part for Aries as well. And we had at least maybe 3 times a year where we did get the Aries group together to really have the fun of trying to locate the transmitter. We did go on simplex a couple of times, and it was kind of tough because in order for everybody to hear each other, you know, as far as the locations, it was very hard. And it was much easier to use a repeater. You know, you could tell others, well, I got a signal from this location of, say, an S5, and somebody a mile away would say, well, I got an S7 over in this direction. So it was basically everybody working together as triangulation of the signals. And once the XP back to net control.
This is WB4LBM. Well, it would be. It's real good to go with teams, really. And it's real interesting. Speaking of finding a transmitter, I had an incident one day where I was on the repeater, and a mobile, we knew who everybody was. Like I say, everybody knew the transmitters. They knew who he was. He didn't say nothing. But anyway, this transmitter came on. I knew the transmitter quick. That's Nick, K4ZYK. But it sure wasn't Nick talking. And the man said, I don't know where I, but the man in this car needs help. He's been in an automobile accident, and he needs help. And he was passed out. That's the reason he couldn't say nothing. But I said, well, I know that. I went back on the air, and I said, that's Nick's car. And Nick was at such and such an intersection about 3 minutes ago, so I know pretty near where he is. And another fellow coming in and said, well, I'm not close to that, but I'll whiz by. Well, I don't have to whiz by. I just see his car from here. And went on down there and seen him, and what has happened. His head had hit the sun visor, and he just peeled his scalp right back. And actually, he was out. Ambulance took him on to the hospital. He did all right. He did all right. And but it was good not only to know the transmitter, but to know, remember where he was just 3 minutes ago, so you know where. About where he is now. All right. Do we have any other stations that'd like to join us? WB4LBM or anyone that got a reef check, that'll be all right too. WB4LBM.
Sierra United, November.
Oh, he told me that you called in and then I forgot it. Go ahead, Kathy, before K6.
WB4LBM. Shame on you, Mr. Jim, but that's okay. I'm going to go away from the fox trotting just so I can, or fox hunting, just so I can make a comment on the scavenger hunt that you were talking about. You know, when you talk about scavenger hunt, a lot of times when I start my new school year, I do a scavenger hunt with the kids. Not that they're looking for things, but they're actually meeting new people, and they're trying to find people who maybe are from that same state they were born in or have the same color hair. So it's like a scavenger hunt. But the last day of school in June, we did a scavenger hunt because there's not a lot of kids there. Every leader has a camera, and they do different activities. They take all the pictures, and then we vote on this to see who should get the prize. But they actually go into do different things, like do a pyramid, find a dog, and a lot of the kids were the dogs. You know, they put a collar around the kid's head. Go into a bathtub because our area has used to have showers and bathtubs. So it was an interesting thing, just like your fox hunting is very interesting. That scavenger hunt was very interesting for those kids at the end of the school year and a lot of fun. And just like it is for the start of school, you know, the kids have a lot of fun with that. So even though it's a little bit different, it's a time to have a lot of fun. So I just wanted to share that with you. Jim, thanks for doing the net. And I just did want to come in and say that this evening. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I think it's back to you, Jim. WB4LBM.
Oh, okay, Cassie. Thank you, ma'am. WB4LBM. Well, it is. All of it is fun. We using the radios to do what you do anyhow on a scavenger hunt. So it's not much different than the hunt. It's just a matter of the best use to find it, whatever it is. And the number of items you're looking for. And so forth. But anyway, and looking for those downed aircraft, that was real interesting. They have aircraft, most all of them, even the little planes, have a transmitter in that plane that will, on impact, it will commence the transmitting. Don't ask me how it knows to start, but it does anyhow. And it don't transmit but a watt. It's a 1 watt transmitter. And it's on the same frequency all the time. And you can scan around and find one. That means an aircraft is down in the area of between your antenna and that one. If you're on simplex. So they're very, very hard to find on simplex. You were right about that. And you certainly wouldn't have no repeaters out there where they are, because them airplanes usually go down in an outlying area, out on a farm or down in a gully or something or other. they've got a very good farm, they'll land in that. They might mow down a half acre of corn, but they land anyway. But anyway, that's a very interesting thing, and it's very, you have to be pretty much on top of the person you're trying to find. Please just call him the fox. But it has to be pretty close on kind of just a 1 watt transmitter on a basically a walkie-talkie, a rubber duck. So a 1 watt walkie-talkie and a rubber duck ain't going to go very far, I'll tell you. But that's what they do anyway. All right. Do we have other stations? WB4LBM.
6 Victor, Jim.
Yes, sir. KC2RMO, WB4LBM. Good evening.
Good evening to you, sir. As I tried to find my control key. Great to hear you, Jim. And coming in a little bit late on this, and I probably missed all the good stuff. But my son is in town on his way back to Virginia from Massachusetts, and so we have him floating around the greater Syracuse area and occasionally checking in here, so we've got that thing going on. But fox hunting is a interesting little subject. I've never done it myself. Always kind of looked like it might be kind of fun. I don't know what you guys have covered so far tonight because I just got here, so if I'm saying anything that's redundant, forgive me, but basically, you know, from what I know of it, you're hiding a low power transmitter, you're using some directional antennas to find it, and having a lot of fun along the way. So that's my extent of knowledge on it. I don't know of any groups around here that are actively doing it, but what the heck? I'm sure there's some, yeah, and. Maybe I'll get involved in a fox hunt someday myself. You never know, you know. So, but I did want to check in, and so I've gotten that far, and I'll just sit back and kind of catch myself up to speed here on everything that's happening. So we'll turn it back to the net. This is KC2RMO. Going back to you, Jim.
All right. Very good, Gary. And We appreciate that. W4LBM here. Well, you ought to get on a fox hunt. I mean, it is imperative that you take the time to go on one. Get somebody to go with you, though. It ain't no good by yourself. I guarantee you, because you'll argue with yourself all day long, but you won't argue with your buddy. So, but get somebody to go with, and you and the wife can make a good team. And y'all go find it. One of you run the radios, one of them drive the car. And you got it made. Go find the fox. And you'll be glad you did. I guarantee you. I ain't never known nobody that didn't have a great time. Even the people who didn't think they would have a good time. But they went anyhow. And was glad of it. We used to have one every year at Stone Mountain Ham Fest. When we was over at Stone Mountain Park. And that would be the limits, was you had to be within the park. Couldn't leave the park. The fox couldn't. He went somewhere in that park. And but he was not limited even to the mountain if he wanted to go hide on the top of it. But wherever he wanted to go hide on that mountain, or around it or whatever, that was fine. One year, the fox said he wanted to go on the train, but he decided that train wouldn't be a fair target because it moves. So if he had done that, we'd have shot him every ain't no doubt about it. But we had a lot of fun there in that park, and that's really not as big a place as it looks like it is. Although, when you go to try to find the daggum little old big translator in that great big old park, that can be very hard because the operator did not have to stay with the translator. He could set the translator off. He had to stay in sight of it so he could see whether anybody came and who found it. But he didn't have to stay there because it was automatically transmitted every 5 minutes and transmit for a minute and then go back off. And that was a great thing. We did that every year as long as we was out at the park itself. All right, this is WB4LBM, a digital station. Over.
6 Victor, sir. Looks like I was doubling. 6 Victor also.
Who else in there? Who was the one to double with Gordon?
Might have been me, Jim. RMO with a recheck.
All right. Very good. Got a recheck out of both of you. 6 Victor, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Jim, and good evening to you, Gary, and to your bride, Stephanie. We've been chatting over here on the admin box a little bit when Gary came aboard. He said, what did I miss, Jim? And I said, the money that Jim was giving away. And he says, oh, it figures. He says, how about the dishes? Any rate, there's a lot of stories, you know, through the years that I could tell of that. I was always with a group. I don't want to call them down and dirty, but they wanted, each time there was a fox hunt, they wanted to make it harder than the one before, make it more difficult, build in hours that it would take, you know, people to get there. But I want to tell you a quick story for just a second. I told you this the other night, Jim, but for the other people. We had a repeater site down in Miami, 2-meter site operating on 14700 that was up 1,000 feet on our television tower. It just had one hellacious footprint. I mean, it would step out and almost talk to the world. And we had a trustee who happened to be an engineer that was working for me at the station there at the CBS television station, who had a little bit of a short fuse, like all of us do from time to time. And he would just get irate when somebody would come in and ker-chunk the repeater. Let me buy a nickel for a second. And it's sort of normal, you know, for hams to pick up the hand mic and go ker-chunk just to make sure that they were in communication with the computer. Well, the moment that he would hear this, he would key his transmitter and he'd come on the air and he'd say, would the person or persons that is currently ker-chunking the repeater please cyst and desist? And then he would sign his call sign. Well, you know what happened. Everybody in reach of the microphone, including family members of the ham, would grab the microphone and ker-chunk it. You hear this, ker-chunk, 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 ker-chunk. So the story goes like this. One more break for timers. I was up in Miami at our studio operation for a meeting. Came out of the meeting and started heading south towards the transmitter site. And this was, I don't know, 20, 25 miles, I guess. And I heard this signal coming on every minute, just precisely every minute, going ker-chunk, and then it would stop. The next minute it would come on and go ker-chunk. So I grabbed the microphone and I called this guy who was on duty down at the transmitter, the trustee, and I said, what's going on? And he came back to me and he says, I don't know, but it's been going on for the last 2.5 hours. And I said, do you have any clues on it? And he said, no. And I said, well, okay, I'm just leaving Miami, but I've got my direction finding antenna in the trunk. I'll pull it out and I'll do some sniffing on the way back. And I did that. And all signals were coming directly out of the south. As I got further south, it got stronger and stronger and stronger. And as I got into the start of the road that went up to the transmitter site, which is about a 1,500-foot road, I guess, and it had trees down by the main drag, this thing was just lambasting me as I pulled onto that road. So I stopped, and I took a bearing, and it was pointing at a set of trees over on the western side of this road. Let me buy another nickel. And so I stopped right there, and I got out of the car, and I walked over to these trees, and I looked up into the tree branches, and what did I find? A plastic bottle, a vitamin bottle that you would get out of a drugstore, green in color, with a 19-inch piece of wire coming out through a hole in the cap of the bottle that was tied onto one of the branches of the tree. So I took this thing off the branch and I opened it up and looked at it. It had a little perforated board in it. Not too many components. It had a 555 timer, a 147.00 crystal. Well, actually, I guess the crystal was the input frequency at 600. Actually, that was, as I recall, was a downshift of 600. So it was at 146.400. A couple of capacitors, and that was it. So some guy had taken the advantage of saying, hey, Mr. Trustee, I'm going to do a number on you, and he did. So I took this bottle up to the transmitter site, and I gave it to the guy that was on duty who was a trustee, and I said, keep this. You may want to think about it someday. KY6V, go ahead, Jim.
All right. Well, buddy, I guarantee you, there's all kinds to make a world. There ain't no doubt about it. W4LBM. All right, Gary, let's go over to you. W4RMO. 74LBM, go ahead. KC2RMO.
Hey, Jim, it's fine as long as it ends up in RMO. I'm happy. Hey, I can't beat that. I wouldn't even try. That's great. What a great story. I just had a thought, though, and I was thinking, you know, if you were going to do something sneaky, and I don't know if anybody has ever done this, they probably beat me to it, but I just had the thought while listening to you a little earlier. Has anybody ever taken the target and, like, attached it to a helium balloon and just, you know, put it, you know, straight up overhead and nobody's looking, you know, that sort of a thing? Has that ever happened before that you know of? And, you know, if it did, did it work well enough to drive everybody crazy? And we'll turn it back to the net. This is KC2RMO going back to you.
This is W4LBM. Well, I don't know whether it's ever happened or not. I know it in a box run has happened, because that wouldn't fit the rules. The rules is he has to be still. The box has to be still, and that balloon wouldn't do that. So that's not good. But as far as doing that, everybody's done anything sometime. In fact, I imagine Gordon just about done that. WB4LBM, do we have any more stations? Use your subjects only.
Six, Victor.
I figured we'd get some there. Go ahead, Gordon.
Yeah, I want to respond to Mr. Gary up there in Syracuse. KY6V here. I've never run across that, Gary. It's very possible. The problem is that balloon's going to float off into some other district, and that district may not have the same input frequency to the repeater or whatever. But I will tell you a similar story, and I told Jim this the other night. We had a character, and it might have been the same guy that I was talking about. I have no idea. Was in some kind of a feud with a repeater organization up around Fort Lauderdale, which was north of us in Miami, and did a similar thing. He put a 555 timer with a kerchunk circuit on it, but he took it out in a boat, Gary, and he hung it on one of the intercoastal buoys and let it loose and took off and disappeared. And these guys took a couple of weeks to find that darn dude. Gary, over.
RMO with a comment.
Yeah, I had turned to you, Gary. Go ahead, sir.
Well, what I was thinking was if you took that helium balloon and you used like a fishing line on it, you know, and you got that stationary, so it's not really moving, you know, and you got it in the right position, it wouldn't be really readily noticed, and it could probably drive people nuts. But the buoy is outstanding. I really like that. I like that a lot. So you can get very creative with this stuff. So KC2RMO, back to KY6V.
Yeah, that reminds me of Big Brother. I wonder if you've ever heard of Big Brother. That was a helium balloon run by the Navy. They raised it over the Key West area in the Florida Keys. Tracking this and that, particularly out of Cuba. Yes, sir. It's only up to the imagination, don't you think, Jim? KY6V, back to net.
Well, that's got to be the old limitation. And believe me, just in this group, it had a pretty wild imagination. WB4LBM, do we have some more stations that would like to join with us? WB4LBM.
Lima, Charlie, Bravo.
Now I get to say it. Now then, George, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Jim. And good evening, Gary. And up to the imagination. With that said, Jim and Gordon and whoever else might want to chime in, seeing that a lot of your your digital modes and a lot of transmitters and everything is being tied in with the internet. Where do you see a fox hunting going from here? Do you chase down IP address, or do you become a hacker, or just how is all this new technology getting ready to or getting influenced into ham radio? How do you proceed and just keep everything going? KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you what I'm going to do. That question is so elemental that I'm going to call on my partner to answer it. Go ahead, Gordon.
And I thought we were friends, Jim. Doggone your buttons. Hello, George. KY6V here. Well, you know, there's many roads to Rome. And as sophisticated as one may think that the infrastructure of our internet is, it is traceable. And yeah, the home route is the IP address. You can ping that address. You can look. You can trace that address and see what variations and nodes it's going through to get to you. I will say that you can pretty well trace that IP address at the moment to the city that it's coming out of, city and state, or country that it's coming out of, George. So I can pretty well trace your IP address and know that you're in Orange City, but I will not know that you're on Michigan Avenue. It doesn't go that far. It keeps that propriety, if you will. And it takes a court order, from my understanding, with a judge's permission for an official organization to go back as far as the IP address ISP server and say, who is this? But I can get so close to you, George, that I can cause you some trouble. Over.
Well, sir, you know, I thought as much there. But, you know, nowadays with all the proxies and the Wi-Fi systems throughout the world, you know, and start piggybacking this system onto that system, you know, it seemed like a person can get very elusive if he has the understanding, or she has the understanding of the technology today there. And, you know, like I had mentioned, the availability to be able to open up so many receivers in the world. You know, I just wondered, if we want to become fox hunters, then basically we have to learn to become hackers to find to get down to the nitty gritty. You know, that was my thought. But I did understand, you know, especially in the Echo Link program, you know, all you got to do is right click on an individual's call, and it will give you the IP address that it's coming from. So you know, I knew that. So thank you, sir, and join the net tonight. KW4 Lima, Charlie Bravo, back to a net control, or whoever else needs to chime in.
Jim, RMO has a comment in the text box, sir.
I just go right ahead, sir.
Hey, thank you, Jim. And hello there, George. That's an interesting thing that you brought up, and it reminds me, going back to my college days, which wasn't all that long ago, goes back about maybe, 2003, something like that. I went to a couple of meetings from a group of folks here known as the Syracuse Linux Users Group, or SLUG. This is a legitimate organization. And these guys weren't just geeks. These were super geeks, okay? These guys had, like, credentials that said super geek. The subject of one of the meetings that I went to was IP masquerading. And it was over my head what they were doing. But basically, the concept was kind of what you were describing, George, where you basically log into one machine that presents a false IP to any network that it's interfacing with. So theoretically, anyway, if you're versed in the ways of IP masquerading, you probably could do something like that. And it's funny, I hadn't thought about that until you mentioned it. But there may be, I don't know, maybe Gordon knows a little bit about it. Maybe somebody else listening knows a little bit about it. It was fascinating. It was an interesting hour and a half listening to these guys. But again, they were talking on a level that I certainly wasn't at that time. So, but interesting stuff. So, you know, maybe this virtual fox hunting may become the wave of the future. It's KC2 RMO turning it back to the net.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, that would be something, all right, to go trailing somebody down. That sounds too much like work to me. It really does. I don't need to know where anybody is that bad. Yeah, that's the way it goes. All right, let's see. WB4LB Avenue, we have additional stations. Over.
Victor X-Ray Papa.
Victor X-Ray Papa, WB4LBM, go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, concerning that last topic, I was listening to Ham Nation on twit.tv last night, and apparently there is a way of a network programming. I didn't really pay attention to it, but there is a system out there that can put you literally hiding without other people knowing it. I'm not sure the name of it, but I remember seeing they were talking about it. Leo Laporte has it as one of his sponsors on his twit.tv network. And it sounds like it's been around for a little bit, and it does have a way of hiding, so you're in private, but you're still able to do all the things on the internet, but your IP address does not come up right, and it's quite a thing. I just quickly Googled, and I didn't find anything right away, but I have a feeling that Friday they'll have it on the twit.tv website. They'll have it as a rebroadcast on Friday. So I'll have to look it up, but it does sound interesting. You know, all of a sudden there is that system out there where you can be hidden. And 1GXP back to net control.
Jim, RMO has another comment in the text box, sir.
All right, Gary, go right ahead.
Thank you one more time there, Jim. The program, or what Rick was talking about, back with the guys from SLUG, that was in the very early days of that. I think that what they've done, or with this concept of of IP masquerading is they now have a thing called, or it's a program as I understand it anyway, a thing called the Anonymizer. All right, and I think you could Google that and get a lot more information on it. There is a program called an Anonymizer, and there are also anonymous surfing servers out there. They're proxies, basically, and you can log into these things, and they will both of these will change the IP address that the world sees. And I think it actually presents either rotating or multiple IP addresses throughout the time that you're in a session or that you're on the internet. So I'm not again sure of all the nuts and bolts of the way these things work, but I think, Rick, what they might have been talking about, because I think that's the best known of them, is this thing called the Anonymizer. So for whatever that's worth, if you want to do a little Googling tonight, that's I think where you might want to start. This is KC2RMO going back to the net.
All right, sir. Very good. WB4LBM. And, yeah, there's got to be people already praying for that. It's too obvious that a program that finds somebody hadn't started working it. Lord have mercy. All right, let's see. Do we have any other stations? WB4LBM.
6, Victor, sir.
Okay, I'm about to turn to you anyhow. Go ahead, Gordon.
Well, thanks, Jim. You know, the only comment that I would have, at least in my experience, and I'd like to be able to take this further, but I think I'm at the brick wall. You know, if somebody hides their IP address, goes through a proxy, etc., etc., even if you can turn the tables upside down and get back to this originating person's IP address, apparently there is some structure, privacy structure, I'm going to put it that way, that will allow you to trace that. As I mentioned earlier, I can trace any one of you gentlemen or ladies' IP addresses right back to the town that you're in. And I know what ISP server you are using, but I can't go any further. I'm blocked at that point. I cannot find out the address of your house or the name that you go by. And I think that's pretty smart, to be very frank with you. And if somebody's come up with an idea where you can take it back to find out that it's Gordon Smith, blah, 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 I'd like to know when they're going to be able to find me. Gary, any comments with your background on that RMO, please?
Yeah, just a couple of things. You had mentioned earlier about a court order. And technically, I mean, if you really wanted to, you know, make a federal case out of the whole thing, that it is possible that they could subpoena the records from your ISP. They could take your IP address and trace it back to the MAC address, you know, of the service where your modem is, where your phone modem is, or your internet modem is. So it's not something that you could do normally through computer commands, okay? That would take something big like that. You'd have to interface directly with the ISP and then work it back from there. But here's an interesting scenario, and this is something that I was thinking about, when you were mentioning that. Let's say that I have an RDP connection with a computer that's 500 miles away from me. If you trace that connection back, you're going to see the computer 500 miles away from me, but you're not going to see my RDP connection coming into that. So that could be another way to kind of be very sneaky about the IPs that are presented to the world, you know, that you could throw somebody off. You could have a, you know, with an RDP connection, you could theoretically set something up, you know, another country, for gosh sakes. So you don't know. So just a little food for thought. We thought we'd throw it back, throw it out there, and we'll go back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
Yeah, this is WB4LBM. Well, I'm sure there's ways to do it, but is the ways to do it worth the effort? That's what it comes down to. And of course, for the company, it would be, because it don't cost nothing, and they don't care what it costs, and they just print more money. So it don't cost nothing, no way. But anyway, I ain't worried about that. They sure know where I am. I guarantee they don't have to do any hunting at all. Just come on and tell me where they want to know it. I'll tell them. I ain't got nothing to hide. All right, Gordon, I'm going to shoot it back over to you and let you take it back over to him and pick up stations if you can find any. Or go ahead and close the net or whatever you want to do. KY6 Victor, WB4LBM, you got the helm, over.
Okay, thank you, Professor Jim. KY6V for South Cars. Guys and gals, we've been running the TIN session this evening. That's a once-in-a-month Thursday night episode. Tonight we've been discussing fox hunting primarily. We got off a little bit on security issues in fox hunting on internet, which was interesting as well. We are 37 minutes into the second hour, so we're going to wind it down and probably let everybody either go to dinner or do whatever they have to do. But before we do we have any other check-ins? Do we have any other comments? Have we not heard from somebody that may be out there and would like to do so? If so, call now. Suffix only, please. KY6V, over. Okay, not hearing Nutta. Net Manager, Miss Sunshine, Miss Kathy, do you have anything for the good of the order before we close? Over.
Sierra United November, I want to thank both you and Jim for doing a super session this evening, and hopefully at one point we can get that posted, because I know we're working on something in the background for that. But I have recorded, as well as I'm sure you have. Just want to briefly go over some announcements with everyone. Not so much about the course, but maybe about the nets this weekend. Usual nets, Saturday morning, Eurasia and Pacific, but we have a fantastic one planned, hopefully. It's going to be the Global Family Hour. It's on technology over the years, and I think Gary is our master of ceremonies for that, and I think Gordon's his backup as well. And on Sunday morning, we're going to talk about August fun, anything we do in August, and we hope that you'll join all those sessions. And, of course, a couple more sessions of the extra course, and we will be winding down for 2013. I just wanted to share that and to tell everyone to have a great night. And once again, Gordon, I must go back to work tomorrow. My summer vacation is over, and I've enjoyed the night and the day today. Here in South Florida, it's been a fantastic day. And Mr. Gary says he's looking at autumn weather for some reason. Back to you, KY6B, and thanks for allowing me to share.
WB4LBM.
Yeah, I think I've got a little delay in my system here tonight. Jim, did you have a comment after Kathy? Over.
Yes, ma'am. I just thought that while we're announcing the nets for this weekend, y'all keep in mind the PCP, Pacific Coast Connection, PCC, brother. Anyway, we're going to have a good session, I think, Saturday. We'll be discussing HF bands and their propagations, so forth. So come and join us on that. WB4LBM, back to you, Jordan.
Hey, Jim, that sounds like a great one. You know, sir, I was reading just before net time this evening a flipping, I don't remember how it was actually stated, a flipping of the polarization of the sun cycle on the moon, or on the sun. Have you read anything about that? I mean, that would be a great adjunct to your Pacific connection coming Saturday, where the North Pole goes south and the South Pole goes north and everything goes crazy. Over.
This is WB4LBM. Now, Gordon, I'm already confused enough. Ain't no sense in me getting any more confused over it.
Well, you know what got started me on this, Jim, was a posting on QRZ. And as I read more about this, people were thinking this is going to be the end of the world, et cetera, et cetera. And then I went further and I looked at the NASA broadcast on this. And do you know this polarization change on the sun has happened since day one, and about halfway through every sun cycle, 11 years sunspot thing that we've had. And here everybody's getting worried about it, and I says, it's never affected me before, Jim. Over.
This is WB4LBM, nor has it my, and I've been around for quite a few. I haven't counted them up. You can take your calculators and run that one in there, but it hasn't affected me. The high and low tide in my bathtub has more effect than that, over.
KY6V. Well, Jim, you know, before we close, I just have to throw this pun in. You think they're talking anything that's similar to the 11-year itch, over?
Well, I don't know, but I've had a lot of itches, but I never had one that lasted that long. I believe I could cure it, though, in less time than 11 years, over.
Let me ask you this, sir, before we close. What is this cycle, 24? They were currently in something like that. What's been your opinion of this 11-year cycle? From my observations, it's been pretty lousy. Over. Have I lost you, gentleman Jim? Over. He's been having some intermittent problems with his internet. Could be happening again tonight. Okay, guys and gals, we're going to make it a wrap. Any last-minute check-ins, please call now. All right, hearing nada. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming by. I've enjoyed it. This subject tonight is something very dear to my heart. It's an adjunct to amateur radio that I have always enjoyed through the years, and I hope that you've enjoyed some of the comments from everybody that participated. With that, we're going to close it and say good evening. We'll see you downwind. We're going to return the SCAR server back to normal use and abuse. And this has been KY6V and WB4LBM closing the session for this evening. Bye-bye, everybody.
This has been the South Cars Outreach Program. Join us again next time for another an hour series of training sessions for amateur radio operators. Goodbye for now.